Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink Podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
So my name is Rick. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Frank, for asking me. And I should all thank Sean, too. He goes to all these great meetings and he speaks and then he recommends that they get me. So he's kind of like my agent, I guess. Always glad to talk in an OA meeting because it's a challenge for me. You know, I am a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict, but my case is a little different. You know, you don't really understand, you know. And so by saying that and feeling that, I have the other symptom of compulsive overeating, which is my case is a little different. You don't understand. You know, OA, I can find all sorts of differences with all sorts of people in OA. And OA is kind of a big tent. You know, we have 100-pounders. We have people who've never been overweight. We have anorexics, bulimics, restrictors. One person in one of the meetings I go to is a gum addict, you know, announces herself that way. So, you know, it takes all kinds. But what I have in common with everyone who identifies really with this program, or everybody who takes it seriously, is I know that I don't eat like other people. I am a weird eater. My reaction to food is different than other people. There's a thing in the in step one of the OA 12 and 12, which I think is a great book. I was kind of prejudiced against it. I thought, well, this can't possibly top the AA big book, but I think this is just brilliantly written, and it really helped me a lot. It says on page 2, it may be that many of us were born with a physical or emotional predisposition to eat compulsively. Whatever the cause, today we are not like normal people when it comes to food and eating behaviors. So I was in another program, and that substance kind of superseded my compulsive eating for the time I was doing it. But that started when I was 14 years old, but I've been a sugar addict and a compulsive overeater since before I can remember. I mean, they had to take out some teeth when I was 4 years old, my 2-year molars, I think, or one of them, because I ate so much sugar. You know, I was from a family where it was a single mom and her dad, and I was the little boy, and whatever I wanted, I got, and what I wanted was sugar and plenty of it. I pretty much lived on it. I actually was told later that I had a mild case of rickets. We weren't poor people, but all I ate was sugar. And that's all I wanted. And somewhere around 6 years old or so, I determined that it was a good thing to clean your plate. And I then became the champion eater of the family. By the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I could out-eat any adult that I knew. It was sort of like a freak thing. Although I know it's not that uncommon. I have this thing, I don't know if anybody can relate, but, you know, normal people, they eat and then they get full and then they stop eating. You know, they're not hungry anymore. They push away food that they like on the plate because they've eaten enough. I have never had that experience. I can eat, you know, getting full really is incidental. Really, it doesn't really matter. I can feel full, but that does not stop me from eating. And I have a tremendous capacity for you know, just volume. The strange thing was, and this makes me feel different too, is I wasn't really an obese kid. You know, I was very active, and you know, I don't know, I, you know, maybe just physiology or something. But I didn't get really obese when I was a kid, even though I was eating more than anybody. And then when in that little interlude, when that other substance took over my obsession and compulsion and all that, I was kind of a down and out alcoholic, and it was sort of I gorged on food when from time to time, but my main focus was not food. When I stopped drinking and went to AA, I became a secretary of meetings, and early on they made me that, and it was my job to get the cookies, and it was the strangest thing. I just couldn't really understand it. I would get the big box of cookies and I would eat several of them before the meeting, and then during the meeting I kept finding myself going back, to a point where it was embarrassing. I was eating all the cookies for the meeting, and I could not stop doing it. And apparently, my sugar addiction and my overeating came back with I was a good spiritual person and read my big book and all that. And I met somebody in another meeting who was also in OA, and she told me about it. And I went to OA. I went to OA when I was 28 years old, maybe. It was in 1980. And there weren't too many men in the meetings then, and I wasn't overweight at the time, so I felt different. But I could relate. What I could relate to was the stories about eating sugar uncontrollably, and the volume eating, And nobody was mean to me. Nobody, gave me looked askance at me or anything. They accepted me, and I joined up, and I got a sponsor. I got a food sponsor. They used to be separate. I don't know. Maybe they still are. This meeting's from L.A., right? This was out in the San Fernando Valley. When I came to OA, and so I went along with the deal there, and I three meals a day, nothing in between, no second helpings, and for me, no sugar. And I worked the program. I moved, which is really an occupational hazard, right? You want to be careful when you move in OA because the meetings aren't the same, or they don't have meetings, or. But I was took the initiative and I started a meeting. I moved to work at this health farm where people came to learn how to eat healthy, and a lot of them were compulsive overeaters, it turned out. A lot of them were not so much interested in eating healthy as in losing weight. So, to counter the idea that you can just learn something and go away and keep doing it, that isn't usually my experience. I started an OA meeting, and the director of the program of the health farm was a compulsive overeater, and I was sponsoring him. And what I told them all is, when you leave here, don't fade out. Go find the meetings. You have to find the meetings. So a couple of years later, I left there and I faded out, and I didn't even look for the meetings. And then ensued. I still kept going to the other program, but what we had was 37 years of struggling with sugar addiction and compulsive overeating, and going up in weight. 40 pounds up, 40 pounds down, 30 pounds up, 50 pounds down, 40 pounds up, and on, plus feeling absolutely insane and certainly not sober in the way that I ate sugar. So it was funny, I was attending other meetings. I was reading the big book, but it just didn't occur to me that I should go back to OA. It just didn't. It was the strangest thing. That guy who I sponsored, who was the head of that program, he went on to be the sort of guru of the Santa Cruz Mountain OA group. And they had his birthday, his 15th birthday or something. And I happened to be in town and I went there, and he identified me as his sponsor and said I helped him a lot. And everybody looked at me like, wow, you're his sponsor? Amazing. You must be really something. And it didn't even affect me. I never thought to go back to OA then. I was just completely insane with food addiction and sugar addiction. And I would quit. control my eating. I mean, I could not eat, if I got too fat. That part of that health farm place was fasting, so I could do that. That could take the weight off you pretty quick. It's much easier for me to eat nothing than it is for me to control my eating. I guess I'm some sort of restrictor in that way. I don't know. But it always came back. It always came back. I was always, doing that crazy, when I what first came to OA, I would drive around with the sticky steering wheel and a kind of sugar daze from place to, a sugar delivery place to place. And I was doing that, toward the end too, 37 years later. My car would drive into the place that I swore I wouldn't go to today. I had all of that. And I one day when I once again had lost 40 pounds and noticed that I'd gained 25 in about 2.5 months, I just panicked. I looked at the scale and I got off the scale and I looked at my watch and I knew, because they had other meetings at this place, at this clubhouse thing, that they had an OA meeting. And I went right there. There happened to be that time. And I just went in. And after 37 years, I got here in 1980. I dropped all that. And I just said, I'm a newcomer, help. And so what I've done is what they told me to do when I got here, work the steps, get a food plan. I went with the old food plan, 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no second helpings, and no sugar. That seems to work for me. Sometimes I do 2 meals a day. If I start late and, I'll have a meal at 11 and 5. If I get up earlier, I have to eat early because of some commitment, then maybe I'll have 3 meals, but no more than that, right? And no snacks and no recreational eating and no sugar. For me, sugar is a drug, period. I can't mess with it. For me to say, well, I can have a little sugar on Thanksgiving is like saying, well, I can have a little bourbon on Thanksgiving. It translates perfectly for me. And as long as I don't eat any of it, I don't want any of it. I've actually sort of achieved that sugar neutrality. I thought that was impossible. I'm not obsessed with sugar. And that is because I haven't eaten none of it. I came back in March of 2019, and I've been abstinent and, no sugar ever since. And, I still am not food abstinent, or I don't have food neutrality, I would say, but I'm able to stick with my eating program. If it's not that comfortable, it's okay. I'm not going to starve to death. I know what to do. I can pray. I pray every morning for God to keep me abstinent and to follow my food plan. I thank Him at night. I meditate. I do service work. That was a good one. I came in with 40 some years, 41 years sobriety, and my normal thing in that program is to say, "Well, we'll let the newcomers do the service work. They need that." And somebody, they needed a secretary in OA, and I started to think that way. Oh, well, we'll let the new, and I thought, wait a minute, I'm the newcomer, so I need to do that. So I've tried to do that. Just do what they told me to do back in 1980, and do what they told me to do in 2019 when I come back, and it works. It actually works a day at a time. I try not to get too worried about what I'm thinking or my philosophizing or my future tripping or my am I really a compulsive overeater? I mean, if you answer most of the 15 questions, and you eat like I do when left to my own devices, I don't have to worry about any differences that I may see with others in this program. I mean, I've got the thing, and there is a solution. So, I haven't been watching the time, but I could go on, but I bet you we're getting close, aren't we, Carol?
You have like 8 minutes, or
Eight
no,
more.
3 minutes and then 5 minutes. Yeah.
3 minutes,
Eight,
then 5 minutes. Oh my
which makes
goodness.
eight.
Oh my goodness. Let me see now. Just if anybody's wondering, I go to this one meeting at 7:30 out of the San Fernando Valley, and there are people there, a fair number of them who have been absent a long time, and they, some of them have lost 100 pounds, 200 pounds even, and they, what their secret is, I'm always listening carefully, is they stick close to the program and make it the top priority. I'm not pure of mind and heart. I get weird thoughts about food, and my disease still tries to tell me I'm different and not really a compulsive overeater, despite all the evidence. If I find myself fading on the program, not going to as many meetings, getting weird thoughts about food, then I know I'm in trouble. No matter how spiritual I think I am, I'll eventually start eating again. So I just gotta stick close, and it's not like torture. I can eat and enjoy my abstinent meals. There's a lot of delicious foods that don't send me off the rails, and I never have to starve myself again. That was my trick when I was going up and down for all those years, was fasting and starving and restricting and all that. Again, that doesn't take any willpower for me. Or that not as much. It's much easier for me to not eat than it is to stop eating once I get started. But not eating any sugar at all really helps that. I don't get those kind of cravings. Again, I'm not claiming I got hold of myself and pulled it together using logic and willpower. I really believe that the difference between those many years of willpower and logic and getting hold of myself and doing what I needed to do, the difference between that and what's happening now, which is I actually am doing it. I have 4.5 years of abstinence and no sugar, is that it's a spiritual program. God is keeping me abstinent. I ask, and God delivered, as long as I keep doing it, as long as I keep doing it, as long as I follow directions and take it a day at a time. So, the other, it always amazes me. Just the other day, I was in an OA meeting, and somebody was really wringing her hands over, what to do at Thanksgiving. How can you not eat dessert at Thanksgiving? Again, or somebody talked about eating a cookie at a religious ceremony. For me, I'm glad I know this. Eating one cookie would be like taking a glass of champagne at a wedding for me. I may never come back. I don't have another 37 years to come back to try to get back here.
You have 5 minutes left.
I want to stay abstinent a day at a time. If you're trying to manage your eating by yourself, I can relate. And nothing really happened as long as I came back, until I came back to OA. So I'm sure there's more I could say, but I think I'm going to just wrap it up there and take questions. Maybe I'll hear some questions that will inspire me to greater wisdom. So thanks for having me, and it was really good to be here. Okay, this is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you ask a question last week, please wait till the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click on the raise your hand icon.
Yes, thank you very much for your share, Rick. It was compelling and very truthful. Do you have a morning ritual, and exactly what is it on a daily basis?
Yes, I read, I have prayer and meditation, a thing I go through, which includes asking God to keep me abstinent. And I go into detail, please keep me on my food plan. No more than three meals today, no second helpings, no recreational eating, and no sugar. And then I read the Voices of Recovery book usually, and then there's a couple other books I read. And I meditate. I hit this about five times a week, to be honest, the meditation part, but it's about 15 minutes of either quiet, just trying to keep my head clear, or some kind of guided meditation occasionally if somebody tells me about a good one. I do all that before I start eating. Right? And then I have my abstinent meal. I don't weigh and measure everything, but I weigh and measure anything that, left to my own devices, I would eat too much of, you know, or go crazy on. I love smoothies, but I would drink a gallon of that stuff if I didn't measure it. I love cereal. But if I didn't put it, you know, have my one cup, I would eat the whole box. So there's, I guess those are yellow light foods and all. So anyway, that's my sort of morning routine, my spiritual and physical routine. Did that answer the question? Okay. Joan.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could talk about food neutrality. Like, what does that, what do those two words mean to you? And like, why is it so hard to get? And what does it mean when you have it?
Thanks. You know, I've said that I have food, I have sugar neutrality going for me now, which is amazing. I never thought that would happen. But food neutrality, I still kind of struggle with. So with sugar, to me, it's just a drug, and I don't do drugs. It is rat poison. If everybody's chowing down on rat poison cookies, I'm not going to have none. You know, I recoil as if from a hot flame, if tempted, right? And I'm not tempted. And I really owe that, I think, to God, me asking for it, and also for not taking the first one. You know, the people that have trouble with food sugar neutrality are having trouble because they think they can have just a little. As far as food neutrality, I do pretty well. You know, I eat my abstinent meals. I don't have this overwhelming craving to jump up and have seconds and thirds and fourths like I used to. But I do sort of have that thing where at the end of the abstinent meal, it's kind of poignant, you know. Parting is such sweet sorrow. Must we part? Well, au revoir, my love. I will see you in, you know, 5 hours. You know, it's sort of like that, you know? So to me, that isn't quite food neutrality. Food neutrality, I guess, would be I'm hungry, I eat my meal, and I go about my business, you know? That's it. I'm not anticipating it. I'm not, you know, treating it like I'm in some kind of love scene in a movie when I'm eating it, and I'm not, you know, regretting it, the parting, when I leave. So, you know, I'm fine with letting go of all that. You know, if I could just eat, I know I'm never going to not enjoy food. You know, I love food, and the foods that I eat, you know, it's great. But, you know, I would just like to get to that place where it's a little less emotional. You know, that would be food neutrality for me. Is that okay? Is that answer? Okay. Melissa.
Hi there. Thank you so much for your share. It was lovely. Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with your higher power, how that's changed over the years, how you connect, et cetera? Thanks.
When I first came to 12-step programs, I didn't believe in God at all. I mean, I wasn't a hater, you know, of religion or anything. It just seemed silly to me. It was like the tooth fairy and, you know, Santa Claus. But what I came to understand was I had this incurable fatal disease, which overeating is as well. And there's no help for it in the world. In OA, I mean, there's no diet that's going to do it for a compulsive overeater. There's no psychiatrist. There's no operation. There's no nothing that's going to help. It's always going to come back. And the only, they said, all we have to offer is, you know, a spiritual program. So, faced with that, and as desperate as I was willing to to fake it. They used to say, fake it till you make it. And I told somebody, well, I don't believe in God. I can't pray, you know, for God to help me. And the guy said, well, if you don't believe him, what do you got to lose then? And somehow that struck me. Yeah. You know, what's going to happen? You know, if I either, you know, I have nothing to lose. I don't believe in anything. If nothing happens, I'm no worse off than I was. If something happens on that long shot. So I just started praying there to a higher power that I didn't couldn't possibly understand. The group was sort of my higher power. I'm just going to do what they say. I'm going to go through with these steps. But if you look in the big book, they're not worried about you coming around, you know. They're not worried about it. No, go, don't worry about it. Just believe in what you want, you know. Make the group your higher power. It's okay. Eventually, you're going to come around. They seem so arrogant that way, but that's what happens, you know. When my head cleared and I began to realize that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, then I had to come to believe that there was something going on here, you know, something was working. And so, you know, the 11th step is continue to, you know, get clearer on all that. So I did, you know, and I tried everything. It did not all of it seemed to work. It wasn't a quick thing for me. I read that whole book, Came to Believe. It's an AA World Service approved literature. The whole thing, which is a bunch of stories of people and how they came to believe, nothing. I read William James's Varieties of a Religious Experience. Very interesting book, but didn't hit me. But I don't know, you know, just one day, I don't know, I came out of the closet. I don't know what it was. I came to believe that there had to be a God. When people said there was no God, I just thought that's ridiculous, you know. The whole thing, the whole universe, you know, that whole not believing God thing was something I dreamed up when I was 12 years old and was reading, you know, Inherit the Wind and Elmer Gantry and all these snotty novels about cops or preachers who, you know, are hypocrites, you know, and all of that. So I just had to let go of my 12-year-old sensibility and it just kind of grew. You know, the last frontier for me, what I'm doing now is working on let go and let God. I got to let go a while ago. Like, there's no sense worrying about anything I can't do anything about. You know, that's my disease messing with me to worry about stuff that I am powerless over. But the one about let God is still scary for me. You know, am I going to trust in God and then something bad happens, something horrible happens, you know, then I won't believe in God, you know, and I don't want to lose any little belief I have. But what I think I'm catching hold of now, which I'm slow, you know, other people have said this, but the idea that no matter what happens, God will be with me. I can trust God for that. If the worst thing that I can imagine happens, God will be there with me and I won't have to eat compulsively. I won't have to go crazy in any other way. God will sustain me no matter what happens. And you know, if I can get hold of that one really solidly, I'll be very happy. I'll be very happy. And I'm pretty happy now. I think I'm on to something with that. I'm on to something that everybody else figures out, you know, within a short time. But it just took me a while. But does that make any sense? Is that good? Okay. Frank?
Oh, thank you so much, Rick. I just, what a refreshing share. With such lightness and joy and humility. I want to talk to you a little bit about character defects, some of the challenges you've had, the successes, the surprises, maybe some of the disappointments related to using the tools of the program to work through your character defects.
Yeah, I talked to somebody last night, or actually a sponsee, who said, when you first brought up this character defect stuff, I thought I didn't have any, you know. And I could relate to that. You know, I didn't understand the concept. You know, basically, you know, I hated myself, but on the other hand, I was doing as well as I possibly could, and nobody should criticize me, and nobody should take it. You know, I'm misunderstood. My motives are good. And yet I'm the worst person who ever lived. So, you know, what it took for me to even get connected with any of that is doing the steps. That's what the steps are there for, right? You don't have to know everything going in. You do the steps, you do the fourth step, you know, the resentments, the fears, the sex inventory, and, you know, going through those with a sponsor, it turns out that, you know, I stepped on the toes of others and they retaliated, and I stepped on the toes of others in specific ways. And, you know, it says in the sixth step, came to believe that God could relieve us of all these defects of character. So I'm supposed to come up with some kind of character defect list in the fifth step, right? By the time I get there, that's what I have sponsees do is, okay, you've looked at yourself, you looked at your resentments, you looked at your shortcomings, you looked at your fears, you know, what are your character defects then? And so for me, it's just delineating them, figuring them out, and then asking God to help me with them, right? I guess there's some things, some shortcomings maybe that I can do myself, right? You know, I was able to quit smoking all by myself. You know, I didn't have to go to Nicotine Anonymous, right? I have some friends who are in Gamblers Anonymous, and they kind of scared me straight. You know, I never had any luck gambling, but I had that kind of weird attraction to it. And so I just don't do it. And I was able to do that without help, you know, but compulsive reading, no hope, you know, no hope for that. And then as far as, you know, I tend to be selfish. So I ask God to help me with my selfishness. I when I catch myself in self-pity, I ask God to please remove that. There's some things I can't do by myself. I cannot do some things by myself. So I'm working the program on them. That's all. You know, and that's a daily thing for these things. One thing about character defects, there's the great mystery is, how come I keep doing them? You know, and I think it's because I keep taking the first one. You know, what I can do the best of my ability today is not act on the character defects that I have, right? I'm dishonest, you know. So what I can do just for today is be honest, is to the best of my ability asking God's help. You know? And over time, then I get less dishonest. I can admit my, you know, I can do the 10th step. I can admit when I'm wrong, which was a novel concept. I used to think it's bad enough to be wrong without admitting it. You know, that just makes you look weak. But the thing is, everybody knows you're wrong. So if you don't admit it, you look like an idiot, you know, or some kind of psycho or something, you know, what's with this guy? So, you know, I guess the short answer is I have come up against the pretty garden variety set of character defects that overeaters have, and I work the program on them to the best of my ability. Is that okay? I don't like it when I ask questions and people get off on some tangent and never answer the question. So that's why I'm asking if I actually answered the question. John.
Thank you so much. Really, really, Rick. How has program improved your relationships?
Well, being honest is a benefit of the program. And that has improved my relationships tremendously. I mean, I think that's probably the big one. Just being honest with other people. And if I don't feel like being honest, I fake it. I do it anyway. Being less selfish has really helped. There's that thing where, you know, you think, all right, I'm going to be a real great program person here. I'm going to meet that person I have a resentment with halfway. But my problem is my perceptions are not that great. And what I think is meeting someone halfway, I may be only going 30%, and expecting them to come the extra 20, to meet me halfway. So when that comes up, as far as that meeting them halfway, I try to err on the side. I figure if I go 70 or 80, maybe I can hit 50, And then it's come to me too, like with making amends. You don't want to meet anybody halfway. It's all me. It's all about my defects. I admit my wrongs, and don't worry about your wrongs. And then the strangest thing happens often is that that's when people will meet you halfway. That's when they come off the defensive. So the program, I never would have thought of any of this, believe me, on my own. And so I've gotten that from the program.
You have just under 5 minutes left.
Okay. Is that okay, John? Is that what you're looking for? Okay.
Doing great. Thanks, Rick.
Bob.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just had a follow-up question on sugar. Was it automatic that you gave up? And your definition of sugar is more or less desserts, correct?
Well, yeah, I don't eat anything with sugar in it. Some people they take that to me is to extremes. Like I eat fruit. I'm a vegetarian, so it's part of my food plan. But fruit doesn't set me off. Anything with refined sugar, I don't eat. And what I learned over my 37 years of, failure was that, those kind of sugars, the health, I'm a health food guy, and so certainly I can have some good healthy maple syrup. Well, good healthy maple syrup gets me right on the hard stuff in no time. Good healthy agave will do that to me too. There's a couple of those that don't seem so bad, just my opinion, but I can have a little stevia maybe once in a while. If I found myself eating 40 packets a day, I would drop it, right? But I don't drink coffee, but I can have a little decaf. I don't eat any kind of refined sugar, but I can have a little of that stuff, the stevia. The chocolate chip cookie is like a syringe full of heroin to me, not even one, not even one. And the thing, dessert is a part of a meal, and I used to crave. After when I was eating, I would eat a meal and it would be like when I was smoking cigarettes. I needed something with sugar in it after a meal. It was a physical pain. And not too long after I stopped eating sugar altogether, that went away. And I don't have that. I'm not suffering with that. When I finish my meal, I have no desire to grab something sweet, which is a miracle. I mean, I never thought that would ever happen to me. Did I get it? Okay. We're getting close here. Maybe a minute, one more quick one. One more quicker answer than I've been giving.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for your share today. It was very good. And the question I have is, how do you deal with fears when a fear comes up, fears in general?
The fear is a big deal, and with people like us, our lives, it's an evil thread corroding, whatever it says in the big book that what really helps me is to recognize that much of my discomfort is fear, whether it's indignation or anger or whatever, it's all fear-based. So it really helps me to say, okay, what are you afraid of? And then when I see what I'm afraid of, either it's something, it's the covers are pulled and it's something that is ridiculous to be afraid of, in which case I can say, thanks God, and just dismiss it. Or if it's something real, I can deal with it. I can talk to somebody about it, pray about it, certainly. Just don't run away from it. Don't try to hide it. There's that thing, that sort of neurotic fear, that is the fear. It's not a fear of anything in particular, it's just the fear. When that comes up, I know I'm definitely in my disease, and that's the main feature of my disease, I think. And so I need to really get into prayer on that. God, I got the fear. God, I got the fear. Help me. Yeah.